is the effects of periglacial processes on soil formation in subarctic Alaska from Eric Geisler.
Thank you, Philip. So I'm going to run through a little bit today about some patterned ground issues that we've found in the Steese Mountains in Alaska, looking at some ridgetop stone pavement, some unsorted circles, some soil flexion lobes, stripes, unsorted, deformed, unsorted circles, some foot slopes, and some river corridors. Just a brief outline there. Project came about starting with some soil survey work that NRCS was doing, and Dr. Ping and I got invited along to look at and observe in the White Mountains. And so we're just trying to figure out how some of this goes. And so we're doing initial soil surveys in a lot of Alaska. I'm sorry that John's left because we had a lot of questions for him about soil survey. Some of it's alpine tundra soils. We're going to look at some permafrost distribution along a topo sequence. That's most of what we're looking at, and how those conditions change over time, and make some proposals for some new taxonomy. Where we are, working here in, out of Fairbanks, about 100 miles over, and these are our soil sites. BLM allowed the NRCS to use their facility here as a central, and we used a helicopter to access all of these sites on a daily basis. So each of these represents the point where we set down, and then we would do a transect across elevation downhill from one of these ridges and get picked up at the end of the day. We did 10 transects, resulting in about 35 soil pits. And those soil pits were sampled for lab analysis. And then the NRCS put another 20 transects in as well. So we've got about 100 pits on this 1 year. And we've got 2 years of data now. So we've got 200 pits, of which about 35 of them have lab data. So where are we at? So in this environment, we're in the Tanana Yukon uplands from the MLRA. 231 is the MLRA number for NRCS. It's all Birch Creek schist for the most part, except for the part way over here at the north. This is the Crazy Mountains, and they're crazy because they're crazy geology. And they do all kinds, there's all kinds of stuff over there. There's been multiple glaciations, mostly alpine glaciations, not continental type, and so we get big valleys, but we don't have things scoured out quite as well as some of the other parts of Alaska. Quite as interesting from our summits, here Eagle Summit, we can see 1,112 meters all the way down to 295 meters here at Central, so we had quite a gradient, but the precipitation was about only about two-thirds at the lower elevation, and our winds are less than half. So big change in temperature there, or in climate, and you can see the temperature drop real cold on the summits. Not that it isn't cold enough already down there. So it's not as cold as we get in the state. The ecozone biome from Varick was the upland tundra, and Taiga. He classifies it mostly in the Taiga, but what we're seeing is a lot of the upland tundra along the ridges. And so we're going, the transects run from the ridge tops down into the valley bottoms, and so we get that shift. All of it fits in the interior Alaska Highlands from NRCS, and we've got a fire history of repeated fires in recent history and over a long period of time. Quite a fire history that we see in the soil pits themselves. So on the stone pavements, on the summits, we had a lot of variation, but kind of a general median elevation for us here. So we get some unsorted circles and we get some stone pavements showing up on the ridge tops. Interestingly enough, as we dig into these things, after you remove the stone pavement, we get quite a bit of soil. There's quite a bit of fines in there. Most of that's been is just from residuals, and we typically at the base of these would run into a different lithic or a different parent material, sometimes at the bottom. But they seem to be ground in. Sometimes we had rocks up higher in the profiles, and sometimes they were cleaner. And I'll talk some more about those profiles a little later. So as we move down slope, kind of have an apron around the hillside here on these shoulder slopes, tend to get wind drifting lost material in from there. The Yukon River is only about 30 miles to the east of us, and for those of you who haven't been there, the Yukon River looks about like the Mississippi where it dumps out down here, and I'm still 1,000 miles from the coast. So it's a huge river, a huge valley, lots of loss available. And so we start to see these vegetation changes, and we start to see some soil flexion lobes like this one coming down into here, and we start to see patches of lichens like this developing in the shoulder slopes. In those, we ended up with typic or eruptic histoturbels. We get good organic or good lust soil, some of it cryoturbated, some of it less so, just deep soils in places. Quite a bit of variability in there. Very little rock. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We can see here that's cryoturbation, certainly. The permafrost has drawn organic materials down here into the 50-60 centimeter range in that pit wall. Quite a bit going on in there. Normally those would come, those are down, this is permafrost here on the base of both of these pits. In there. So as we move down the back slopes, we tend to get larger solar flexion lobes, and then in places they start to stretch into these stripes, and these stripes will stretch right down into the timber, as we'll see a little later. As we move off the shoulders, we see more and more development. We see some of the stripes in here. And here's the stripes, and you can see the stripes amongst the timber in here coming down. So these are your stripes as you're looking at them. So you get a stripe, and then you get a deep moss layer, organics in here, and just like somebody drew a line between them. But this material gets sucked back underneath, and I see some of that suck. So here's a different pit. We're down in there, but I've got organics sucked clear down here into about 80 centimeters in this one. And then again, what you see is ice here at about 30 centimeters down, and ice there at 80 centimeters down. And so this is permafrost. Where it's insulated with the heavy moss, we get shallow to permafrost. Where it's not insulated with the moss, we get very deep. We get much deeper to permafrost. So we get a lot of cryoturbation because of that difference going on. A lot of our pits are 2.5 to 3 meters across to cross the pit on. So on the foot slopes, we get into heavier timber. We still have a few patches of moss kicking around, but they've gotten out of the stripe mode. These tend to be more of a glacial or a fluvial or a colluvial material deposited in here. But certainly we can still see some of that cryoturbation dropping down here into this. All of these pits had a lithic discontinuity at the bottom. So we had a different parent material at the base of these pits than in the pit walls themselves. Had fairly good soil development in here, depending upon where we were, more or less rock, depending upon the colluvium and how it was deposited. Some of these, as we looked at them, some of these were, we would call it a typic cryoquip there, but maybe before the fire, that was a histic cryoquip. And in this one, maybe today it's an aquahumic cryopt, but before maybe it was a typic aquaturbel. So we see changes that the fire is having come through. And here's one of the pits that we had with lots of rock, but and just into a lithic contact at the bottom, just a cryopt. So we kind of went from pits, stone pavement, circles, into our solar flexion lobes, on into our stripes, down into our foot slopes, and here's typically what our valleys look like. So we get this graduation of materials coming on down through the hillside. So, top, sequence down through here. Let's look a little at the chemistry or the lab analysis. So the organic material, no surprise, the summits were pretty shallow. Our mid-slopes were fairly deep in organics, and then we had a little less at the bottom. Permafrost tended to be most common in here, although it was not uncommon there. Permafrost was seldom present on the ridges. Our carbon-nitrogen ratio. Interesting, in the brown, carbon-nitrogen ratio pretty much dropped continually from ridgetop to valley floor. And our organics, in the organic layer, pretty much stayed up, except for this one in the shoulder position, and I haven't done enough analysis yet to figure out why that one's a little lower in the shoulder position, why the carbon-nitrogen ratio isn't so high there. pH, ridgetop across, coming down to valley floor, just interesting that all of them seem to start at about 3.5 or 4, and regardless of what the parent material was, and all of them have a slight increase to a considerable increase coming deeper in the profile. So just lots of organics in the surface, as I would expect, the pH was up a little higher. Percent carbon in the organic horizons versus the top mineral horizon. The lesson here, I guess, is that all of our organics, all of our carbon, organic carbon, is being kept within the organic layer. We aren't getting a lot of decomposition, and we aren't seeing a lot of that move through. Rock fragments were all over the map, but I was going to give a graph, and I thought, no, let's look at what it looks like. So anyway, here we are at the summit. No surprise, all the rock is there. A fair amount of rock at the foot slopes. And again, this is mostly loess, so very little rock in there. So a couple of classifications that we'd like to propose. One is this edge here on the upper slopes, the fullest, where it's not saturated. And it's had a turbel or an aqua turbel history before. And so I'd like to propose that maybe that might be something we would look at, a dry organic layer on top with an aqua turbel underneath. And then this is our ridge top that I talked about. So this is in the lichen part, and this is the outside of the sorted circle. And so we get, this is all one profile, all one pet on. And so trying to figure out how we get a turbic dystrocryopt or a turbic haplocryopt in one of those positions. Something else we looked at was whether we could get a disto gel, ortho gel, ortho, just a minute, get it straight here, ortho, a distro ortho, because we've got a haplo ortho, but some of ours are don't have the chemistry for that, so that'd be that. So acknowledge the folks that helped, the NRCS, big help to them. The lab folks at the university did a lot of help with running the labs, and I can't give enough credit to my lab assistant. She's been with me a long time. So.